Good evening, peeps and peepettes and
podcast radio.
And welcome to Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air, celebrating the diversity of our humanity. I am Jim Corey, your host, and the editor-publisher of Diversity Rules Magazine, a niche subscription-only publication based in upstate New York. Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air is an extension of that print publication. So we'll be discussing issues of the day in an informal at the kitchen table format, and you're probably going to hear my dog barking periodically, but that's what sitting at the kitchen table is all about. No one is right on this show. It is simply an airing of ideas and perspectives. As Aristotle said, it is the mark of an educated mind to entertain a thought without accepting it. So while you may hear some things that you will disagree with, all we ask is that you think about what you heard, and more importantly, think for yourselves. Many people don't know how to think for themselves these days. So if you're interested in finding out more about Diversity Rules, check out the website at www.diversityrulesmagazine.com. There you'll find out how to subscribe, advertise, or just give us money if you want to. We always take money. There are also advertising opportunities for this radio show as well. I have to also promote the Indiegogo campaign to help raise funds to expand the show's presence further in broadcast land, as well as to help sustain the day-to-day operations of the publication. The link to that campaign is on the radio show's website at diversityrules.freespiritbroadcasting.com. And last, I want to thank the folks at Free Spirit Broadcasting for providing Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air, a home to enlighten and entertain. So with all that introductory stuff out of the way, let's move on to our guests. Barb Morrison, who identifies as a bisexual, is an American recording artist, top five Billboard dance chart songwriter, and gold record producer. She is best known as a producer for numerous artists such as Blondie, Rufus Wainwright, LP, and as one half of the production duo of Super Buddha. So Barb, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jim. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Awesome.
I just got a note from Bobby that I spoke too soon over my intro. I thought I heard it go. Oh, well. We'll get it right next week.
What did you miss some of it or something?
Well, I don't know. I think I jumped the gun. I heard the thing start, and then it stopped, and then I just started my little brief intro here, but I got a note from Robbie saying I talked too soon.
Well, we'll just wing it.
Yeah,
now, are curse words allowed on this podcast or not?
What's that?
Are curse words allowed on this podcast or not?
Oh, yeah. You can say anything
awesome.
You want.
Great. So this
Internet
is like rated. This is not rated. This is not rated G.
No.
Excellent.
I've let the F fly a few times, so you're cool if you feel
compelled
to do that.
Because I'm on a really strong cup of coffee right now, so I have no idea what's going to come out.
So you said it's snowing down there, huh?
It hasn't started yet, but they're supposed to, you know, they panic so hard. So it's like, you know, everybody's got all their food and we're all inside. And I'm just like, I'm not going out for a couple of days. So it'll be fine. It'll be fine. You know,
well,
it's not
snow
like
in New York City is like getting 2 feet up here. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it'll be fine. You know, it'll all be slush in a day or so and we'll move on.
But it's still the excitement of snow in New York City. That's cool, you know. But anyway,
yeah, it's good for the first hour. It looks
New York. What's that?
I said it's good for the first hour, and then it's, you know, gray.
Yeah. It looks nice, and then you want to get rid of it. That's how I feel about winter this year.
Exactly.
So you're from upstate New York, Schenectady, right?
I am from Schenectady. I was born and raised there, and I lived in Florida for a couple of years. But, mostly a New Yorker.
Yeah. So give us an idea of who you are. Give us an idea about your background and how you came to be who you are today.
Oh, wow. That's a big question.
You have an hour to fill. So.
Yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly. I was born in upstate, in Schenectady, and I just, I picked up, musical instruments at an early age, so I was always, in some band or another. And my family moved to Florida for a couple years, and, those were, my early teenage years. And so, that's what you do when you're an early teenager. You either get in bands or get in trouble or both. And so I was in a bunch of bands in Florida for the 4 years I was down there. Did a lot of experimental music and was in a bunch of punk bands. And I joined my first punk band as a drummer when I was 14. And was in a bunch of other bands. I played saxophone, so everybody always wanted me to, play X-Ray Specs or Madness or, Ska or whatever was going on in the 80s. So that was always fun. And then, around 84, 85 era, I moved back up to New York City as a teenager. And, I got on that bus with, $1,000 and a guitar and a saxophone and never looked back.
So you said in your interview you were truly were in a war zone just walking down the street. So what's that mean?
Oh, in New York City. Well, the 80s in New York City was just incredible. It was anything east of Third Avenue was it's even hard to explain. It was fun. It was grimy and it was dangerous and there was incredible music and incredible art going on and the city was just a lot of fun, man, Times Square was a blast and it was really seedy and you had all the porno theaters and it was just like old New York. It was just so cool and it was
the Urban Wild West in your interview.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. It was just, it was what we all came here for, and I just think that, I don't want to make this interview, a bitch fest about what New York is not anymore because we could really go there. And anybody who wants to call in and, rattle off about that is fine. But, I think you do have to move on. And, the city's just different, but, oh, man, it was such a blast back then. CBGB's was awesome. The Pyramid, those early days of the Pyramid with RuPaul and Lady Bunny and D-Light and all that stuff. It was just so much fun. Every night going out in the East Village was a riot. And, we lived in these, burnt out buildings. I lived in a building with, no electricity. We would, pirate electricity from the building next door in those cheap, cheap brown extension cords that you get at Duane Reade or something,
Oh boy!
And so we just linked
Once
those
it burn
together
up really quickly. Yeah.
we linked those together, throw them out the window, pass them to the next building, and then we'd light up the house light up the apartment like a Christmas tree. But it was we had hot water, which was a luxury. So, but it was a fun time, man. It was a fun time to be in music, and it was a fun time to be. It's a fun time to be a teenager and be punk rock. And there was a lot of really cool things happening in music at the time. I'm just really grateful that made me who I am today.
You find the city's become more antiseptic now compared to when you first got there?
Yeah. I pulled up my car in the East Village about a year ago. It was in the summer. And these cops were parked right next to me. And I got out of my car. I had my saxophone with me. I got out of my car. I opened my trunk. I put the saxophone in the trunk, and I shut the trunk. And the cop was sitting right there, and he goes, "So now everybody's going to know you have a saxophone in your trunk." And I said, "There's no crime in the East Village anymore." And they started cracking up. They were like, "Oh, you're kind of right, but not really." But, I wasn't, I wasn't worried about anybody breaking into my car in the East Village, that's for sure. The East Village
Where's
to me.
Where's the happening spot in New York City now? It used to be the Village, then it shifted to Chelsea, and now I hear it's someplace else now. Where is it? Is it?
I think Manhattan's dead, but tomatoes will fly on that statement. Manhattan's dead. I've been living in Brooklyn since 2000. And, even Brooklyn is starting to move east, Williamsburg, it was cool. It was actually the coolest in the late 80s, but then it just got infested, and then it's all moving east. I don't know what's gonna I'm thinking about looking at apartments in the Rockaways. So yeah. I probably shouldn't say that in public because then everybody's going
to
go off there and snatch everything up. Yeah, totally. Maybe not always the best way.
It's Harlem. Harlem is the place to live now, isn't it? A lot of people going
I actually just saw an apartment in Harlem that it was pretty awesome, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure. I'm definitely not the connoisseur of, like, what's, you know, cool on the island right now because I just really don't go. I stay in Brooklyn a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, Brooklyn. To me, Brooklyn's way more happening, and, like, the art scene is more happening, and, you know, the kids, I mean, people complain about the hipsters and stuff, but, you know, there's definitely a hub of, like, creativity happening, without a doubt.
Well, when I was a kid, Mom and Dad used to go to Brooklyn to the Italian section and get a lot of goodies.
Oh, yeah, man. I used to live in the Italian section. I used to live in the Donny Brasco neighborhood. It's actually it's actually called Don Bosco is that neighborhood, but it's not called not what the neighborhood is called, but it's the Graham Avenue area, and yeah, that's all, like, you know, they still got all the nice mafioso Italian food and pastries,
awesome.
And it's really good.
You said you met Salvador Dali the first time you were there, huh?
I didn't meet him. Yeah, I was walking down the 7th Avenue when I was 17 years old in 1984, and I was walking down 7th Avenue, and he just came out of a building all by himself, and I mean, you know, you can't mistake him when, you know, you see him and you're like, oh. And he walked out of the building right in front of me, just walked right past me, stepped down onto 7th Avenue, hailed a cab pulled up, he got in the cab, and the cab pulled away, and I thought I was dreaming.
Too funny.
And I just thought, oh, my God, I totally could live in this city. That was, like, right before, it was about the first week I was here, so I knew I was in the right place.
But he must have been pretty old then, too, right? I don't know.
I think he died, this was in, I think, 84, 85, so I think he died in 89, 90, somewhere around there. I don't know, I don't have Wikipedia in front of me, so I'm pretty sure he was dead by 90 for sure, but
But he was old enough to hail a cab and walk, so you saw him.
He was all by himself, yep, he was all by himself,
cool.
He hailed a cab and he was fine.
So, Schenectady, you already mentioned that, but... I live in Oneonta here, so you were just up the road there. So
Yeah.
You know, it's very it can be very provincial and suppressing here in upstate New York, but you know, I sort of like it. I love it actually. It's my hometown, but you got out.
Yeah, well, I got out of Schenectady because my family moved out, so you know, I ended up, like I said, I ended up in Florida, which is, you know, look, it's gorgeous. When I go down there right now, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't even believe I hated it down here because it's just the beaches are beautiful. The weather is great. The living is, like, slow-paced. Everything is, like, inexpensive. You know, you can fill your car with groceries for $100. But, you know, I was a teenager and I was antsy. And I got on this show that was on a college radio station called The Difficult Listening Show. I was experimenting with, you know, some... as all teenagers do, I was experimenting with some psychedelics in the 80s. And I was making a lot of noise music and a lot of experimental music and, you know, listening to, like, a lot of, like, Cabaret Voltaire and, like, Neubauten and Throbbing Gristle and all those kind of, you know, and a lot of out jazz, like a ton of out jazz, Ornette Coleman and all that stuff. So I just, I was kind of in a bunch of noise bands, and we would get on this show called The Difficult Listening Show. And then I guess, I don't know, you know, I got on that like a couple times in Tampa, and I was like, next, like my sights were just set. Like, I was like, oh, okay, I'm on this show that I wanted to be on, this radio show. Now what do I do? And
yeah.
I just thought, I think I got to move to New York because, like, I want to do a lot, like, musically. So I just packed up and left, man. And, you know, I never turned back. I go back there to just chill on the beach.
Where were you in Florida? Tampa, you said?
In Tampa. Yeah, Largo, really. It's, like, in the Clearwater area.
Yeah. Cool.
And I still got, like, you know, all my homies down there. Shout out to Largo, everybody who's listening from Largo.
Cool.
You know, it's like kind of a little bit like my home, but, you know, I've been in New York for almost 30 years, so this is really my home.
Well, I'm going to give everybody the call-in number if they want to call in and chat with you.
Yeah, do that.
646-727-3116. Again, 646-727-3116. So feel free to call in. Oh, somebody's called in already. Look at that.
Wow. All right.
But Robbie is going to screen that call, looks like.
Okay.
We'll
you screen them, Robbie. Screen them good. We don't want
any
lip from anybody.
You identify as a bisexual. And,
well, I mean,
David,
you know, you and
really
I, you
like
and I have,
term.
You, yeah, you and I have talked about not me not liking
yeah.
this term.
Well, let's tell broadcast land why you you prefer a different term.
Well, you know, I for the civilians or whatever, for you know a broader audience, obviously you have to say bisexual because people don't really, you know, it's not like they have the spectrum of the choices on hand. But I mean, bi really means two, and I don't feel like, you know, I identify on the trans spectrum, so there's that, and then I've also had, you know, trans partners, and I just think that once you get into that kind of a situation, you know, people are identifying somewhere on the spectrum, there's not, the binary kind of falls away, so I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like limiting it to two is just a little...
Yeah,
I don't think it's the right thing, you know. I mean, yeah. I guess they call it like pansexual would be like multiple, you know, multiple genders or whatever. But
yeah.
like I've fallen in love with people, which is the way it's always been for me.
But yeah, I mean, people are hung up on labels, you know. So I guess people like to have a label and.
I think it helps them feel safe, and I think, for sure the term bisexual, it has a stigma on both sides because I think if you tell straight people you're bisexual, they're like, oh, you're just, you know, kind of crazy and, like, you'll do anything. And then if you tell, like, gay people you're bisexual, they're just like, oh, you haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
So there's this thing of, like, you know, neither of those things are true at all. But, you know, people love to have a label, so.
Yeah. So do you want to take a caller?
Sure, why not?
Sure, let's do a caller. Let's break up the interview with a caller. Let's bring that caller on.
Hello?
Hi. Hello?
Hello, yes. Hey, Bob, this is Mark.
What, Mark, what's up, man?
Hey, listen, I figured, hey, I'm going to listen to your show here, and I'm going to ask you a question that kind of brings about the entirety of what we're talking about in terms of
diversity. Now, wait, is this the great photographer, Mark Briatek?
Yeah, that would be me, Barb.
Yeah,
I thought I
recognized your voice. And just to all you listeners out there, this guy is one of the greatest photographers around.
Oh,
so, this
is the one that took the picture of you standing with a guitar.
He took one of the pictures of me with a guitar. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. So he's
well, the
incredible.
The one that's in the magazine here.
Before I even ask a question here, I just got to say that, you know, Barb is, you know, I've followed her since the 90s in the Itchy Trigger Finger days, and to say that she is one of the most immensely talented human beings would be an understatement.
The check's in the mail, Mark.
But now, here's my question for
you,
Barb. Considering you're multi-talented, you know, in the music field and discussing how New York has changed, you know, New York has become so homogenized. Do you feel that today, especially now, considering that somebody with your wealth of musical knowledge, that when you're in the studio, do you feel that maybe music today has become homogenized as well?
Well, you know, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. Music has always been homogenized, I mean, since pop music started. So, like, in the 50s, you know, they were trying to market people, like, to, you know, the most, you know, candy type of thing you could get going.
Right.
And that's just the way they do pop music. That's just the way pop music is. So there's always going to be that. But I do believe that there's exciting stuff out there right now. And, like, I was just telling Jim, like, Brooklyn has a lot of really cool stuff going on, man. You know, I know we like to make fun of the hipsters and stuff, but there's still people creating. And, you know, New York City always has a pulse, and there's always, it's still grimy in some places. And, And there's also, you know, there's good music coming out of, there's music coming out of England right now. There's good music coming out. I mean, there's, I'm not jaded enough to say that there's no good music. I think pop has definitely, pop has always been homogenized. It always will be. And
sure.
There's no reason to even complain about it, you know?
Well, the homogenization really comes, I'm thinking today, towards, let's say, the younger audiences which don't know how to seek out, you know, venues for different kinds of music. I mean, that's changing with, you know, more internet, you know, radio and what have you. But let's say the kid today that's, you know, trying to learn something about music. You know, I grew up, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and I'm listening to rock and punk, and that kind of inspired you.
Right.
I don't know if the kids today, you know, have the access to that kind of music that would be so inspirational. They're more inspired by the idea of music as fame as opposed to music as art. And, you know, I mean, look, there is a plus side to this. I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this. The plus side is that there are a lot of great musicians, and we know a few of them personally, and they have the ability today to market themselves and not have to, you know, play record company games.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, for
yeah.
sure. But, you know, there's two layers to this, which is, one, before the internet, we had to go way out of our way to find cool stuff.
Right.
Like those bands that I just told, the bands that I just mentioned, those noise bands, I mean, we had to go way out of our way to find that stuff. I remember when I was in 10th grade, I would send away to this magazine in London, and I would order, you know, my Buzzcocks cassette, or my, you know, Anti Nowhere League cassette, or my, and it would take weeks for this stuff to arrive, and I'd come home from school and it'd be sitting there on my table, on my kitchen table, with all the English postmarks on it and stuff, and my UK subs button, and I'd just be so excited. But I really had to work to find that stuff. And I would always write a little letter when I ordered my stuff, and I'd be like, you know, Florida sucks, punk rock rules, like, you know, so, you know, I would hope that they would think I was, like, you know, the coolest 14-year-old on the planet, some, like, you know, person working at a magazine in, you know, London. But, you know, so there's that. We had to really work to find something interesting. I don't think in the day of the internet, I don't think you have to work so hard. You click around.
No, not
so that's,
only that,
that's,
I mean...
That's one thing. It's not as much of a, there's no payoff as much as what we had. I mean, I remember, like I just said, coming home from school and being like, I think my Dead Kennedys cassette is going to be sitting on my kitchen table when I get
my
home.
Language.
And I cannot wait to open it, you know? So I know this sounds like the Flintstones to anybody under 30, but this is the way it was. And so there's that, okay? So that's one thing. The other thing is, you're never going to change teenagers. Teenagers want to make or listen to loud, angry, piss-your-parents-off stuff that, like, doesn't even sound like music. So
wait a minute. Where
that,
are these
what,
teenagers?
Because well, wait a minute. Just
okay.
Hear me out. Let me just come to their defense for a second, okay?
All right.
So a couple years ago, and I know that people have mixed feelings about this genre of music, but a couple years ago, this thing came out called dubstep. And dubstep was horrible sounding. Come on, you know it is. And they would crank it up, and they'd go crazy, and everybody over 35 would be like, that's horrible, turn it down. And you know what? They did exactly what we did with punk rock. They annoyed us. They danced to it. They drank a bunch of Red Bull. We didn't have Red Bull back then, but, like, they danced. They drank the Red Bull. They got crazy. They did some drugs, and they cranked up this music that we didn't understand. We were just annoyed by. So you know what? I got to say bravo to them. But, you
okay,
know,
you
there'll
know
be another, there'll be another
that.
Wave. There'll be another wave of something that
yeah.
happens.
Yeah,
you know?
I got annoyed
one thing I like
when
about
when
New York
when,
City is the street musicians. You know, I always love standing on the corner listening to the street musicians.
Dude,
they're
let
awesome,
me tell
you
something.
You know?
The best musicians in the world, I feel, are on the streets of New York sometimes.
Yeah, well, yeah,
they've
definitely.
Got the greatest tunes and the beats, and it's, you know, they're just jamming out there, doing nothing special. But I just
Try going to New Orleans, man. You can't even make it down the street with hearing hot street musicians.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I'm saying, Mark, is that, like, there's always going to be some kids that are, and, you know, same thing with dubstep now. They've taken little pieces of dubstep and they put it in, like, Nicki Minaj songs, or they put it in, like, a Maroon 5 song. They'll put a little dubstep bass, you know, wobble in it. So it's, everything is just, you know, it evolves, and
true.
The older we get, we're not supposed to understand, you know,
we're not
supposed to understand what the 16-year-old's like. I hate to break it to you. Like,
you've got a point about the over 35 thing, because when Korn started putting in dubstep on the CD before their last one, I was pretty much gone with them already. I figured that was enough for me. I was like, what is this dubstep and Korn CD of all
right.
bands?
Right.
And I was
I'm
done.
That's 10 years old now. The dubstep's almost 10 years old.
Yeah.
So I'm dancing as fast as I can over here. Grandpa's dancing as fast as I can. So, thanks for calling in, Mark.
Yeah,
no
that's
problem.
Great.
I'm going to continue listening. Take care, guys.
All right, thanks, dude.
Easy. Right, thanks bye. For calling.
Right, cool.
So, Jim.
Well, that was a cool conversation.
Yeah, what else you got going on?
Oh, God, we got a lot of stuff. I wanted to touch more on your the sexuality aspect of this.
Okay, let's let it rip.
Because, you know, a lot of people, they deny the existence of bisexuals. You know, so a lot of people think that you can't be bisexual. You can't have sex with a man and a woman. You're either gay or straight. And, you know, I know that's not true, and I'm not sure where that impression comes from and why people think that people can't like both sex, you know?
I think that it's just based in fear. I think people like to put things in little neat little boxes, and no pun intended.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that, like what we were saying before, people love a label. And you said this in the interview, Jim, you know, I know a ton of people that identify as gay that are, you know, mildly bisexual, and they don't announce it.
Yeah.
Because nowadays, you know, with gay rights and all this, it's like being gay is actually more acceptable than being labeled bisexual.
With a lot of people, you know. Yeah.
What's that?
But personally, I never really had an inclination to try one of these vagina critters, but you know, I know some people do, and I guess never say never, right?
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, it's up to you. I don't really know anything about critters, so.
Yeah, but, well, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. Because I know I hear that a lot. It's like, you know, you can't be bi, you can't be this, you can't be that. I don't understand why people just can't let people be who they are, and if they're into both sexes, then that's fine, you know?
I think the misconception is that, you know, if you are into multiple genders, then you can't ever really settle down or settle in on one. And, that has definitely not been true for me. I'm like a serial monogamist. You know, I'm like the ultimate in long-term relationships. I mean, you know, I actually just got out of a 5-year relationship, but like, it's like my favorite thing is to just kind of settle down with somebody and, you know, make a home and, you know, come home to that person. And that has nothing to do with, you know, not being able to choose. If I fall in love with somebody and I want to have a life with them, then that's all that matters, you know?
Yeah. Now, you said, you've been gratified by male, female, and trans partners. So you've had trans partners as well, you know?
My last relationship, my last 5-year relationship was with a trans partner. I mean, I had my first romantic experience with a trans woman when I was 14. It was very sweet. It wasn't like this, like, full-blown, you know, sexual thing. It was very sweet,
sure.
But I felt something, and I was like, I realized that, you know, I was coming of age. I was a teenager, so you're just trying to figure that stuff out, you know, around then. And I just thought, oh, wow, I guess, you know, I'm definitely not going to be – I'll be coloring outside the lines here, you know. It was kind of early on, so, you know, and I just, I thought I was a little boy when I was 3, so it's, you know, I kind of understood at an early age that these, you know, these labels and these boxes weren't going to work.
Yeah. Well, I respect anybody that has the gumption and the balls to just get out and be who they are and do what they want, You know, it's I respect you a lot because of that, because you seem
Thank
like
you.
A person that just does what she wants, and if it makes you happy, it makes you happy, and that's what everybody should live by, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I can't imagine any other way. I think life is too short to, you know.
Well, you know, you got to be true to yourself. If you're not true to yourself, then who are you going to be true to? You certainly can't be true to somebody else if you're not true to yourself.
Absolutely.
What you're all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's cool. Yeah, so now, there was something in the news a little while ago about a bunch of bisexual activists that went to the White House. That must have been exhilarating to see.
You know, I followed that story a little bit, and I just thought it was, I mean, I was just psyched that they went and did it and that they were visible and that, you know, again, like I'm not an activist where it's like, you know, I get out there and I'm like a bisexual activist because I personally don't even love the word. But you know, I love a good cause and I love a good protest, and you know, I've marched with Occupy. I'm not like an Occupy Wall Street person, but I've gotten out there on the streets and I love the whole thing that's happened with the Arab Spring, and I love that the whole planet has kind of like blown up with this, like, you know, an uproar of like people are not going to take it anymore. It's like a beautiful thing to witness in this lifetime, you know, just seeing like streets full of people just getting out there and just being like, we are not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
And knowing that this group of people went down to the White House and did this, I mean, I thought that was really cool because, you know, look, there are many things that are wrong with Obama, but there are many things that are right with him too. And I know that this is not like a political show, but like, I will just come to his defense and say he was the first dude to go in his inaugural speech. He said, I think Clinton actually said gay and lesbian. I think Clinton was actually the first person to say that, but Obama said bisexual and transgender. I mean, I started crying when I heard that. That was like the most, because there's some kid in, you know, North Dakota that now has to turn to his Republican dad and be like, Daddy, what's bisexual and transgender mean? And the father has to be like, they'll probably be like, turn that off. But
You
know, I mean, these words need to like not be taboo, and these words need to not be shameful, and you know, especially bisexual and transgender. Both of those words were, I mean, I don't know, I don't know the technicalities of it, but I know that, you know, these words have been treated as like mental illness in the past. So
because that carries through the kid, and it disrupts their growth and their psyche, and they grow up with this attitude there's something wrong with them, and we have too much of that going on. You know, people need to respect people and
absolutely
empower
and the fact
people.
That,
and I think, you know, Obama saying LGBT just empowers people.
But he didn't even say LGBT. He didn't even say LGBT. He said gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender. He spelled it out. It was like the most beautiful thing to hear. I have to say, 20 years ago, as a young, you know, person, you know, coming into their own sexual identity, I didn't think I would ever, I could never dream that I would hear the president saying those words.
Yeah.
I really did not think that was going to happen in my lifetime. I didn't think gay marriage would happen in my lifetime.
And it's on a fast track to happening sooner than we ever thought. Yeah,
I know. And
incredible.
I have to say, I'm grateful that, like, I'm old enough to have seen the struggle behind that, and I'm young enough to, like, live the benefits of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I've always longed for, you know, I always say this. I said I long for the days of milk. I really would love to see people just get in the streets again with their hands and fists up in the air, just like they did back then. I find our movement has become very antiseptic and very politically correct. You know, and I'm disappointed with that. You know, I want to see people get rowdy in the streets and just yell and do whatever, you know?
Well, I mean, some of those Occupy protests were rowdy, man. I mean, when they
yeah.
stormed Zuccotti last year, I was down there in the middle of the night, and we were up against stormtroopers and helicopters, and that was some rowdy
God.
Shit. And I know that it was not about, like, any gay rights or anything, but there was everybody, there was every walk of person,
yeah.
and it was...
But people were
it
taking
was,
a stand, you know? That's what we need people to do, and, you know, a lot of people defer their activism to the Human Rights Campaign. Not saying anything wrong about the Human Rights Campaign or anything like that, but I see a lot of people deferring their personal responsibility to these groups that may not represent us the way they should be.
I also think that, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but, like, I'm getting up there. I think that the kids don't see it as much of an issue as we did.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? I think that, like, you know, it's a lot more chill of a situation for them than it was for us. I mean,
yeah.
we were horrified about, like, you know, getting found out or getting, you know, fag bashed or whatever. I mean, you know, it was horrible. It was horrible. Getting gay bashed was, like, a real threat. I mean, I know it still is, but, like...
Well, unfortunately,
we were just like,
yeah, it is in a lot of places.
You'd be, like, out, you know, on the streets, and you'd just be like, I'm going to get fag bashed. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we called it back then. I know that, you know, it's not the term, but that's what they called it back then. And it was like, we were really scared of that stuff, man. I mean, you know, I think the world has definitely changed.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to somebody grappling with their sexuality, their bisexuality, or their gender identity in general?
Well, like I said, I think that it is easier for this generation coming up. I think that they have a lot of resources and, you know, the internet can make you feel not so alone.
Yeah.
For sure. Like I said, you know, we were so scared and we were so alone that, like, you know, a lot of bad stuff happened because of that. So the advice that I could give anybody on that is just, you know, reach out and try and find your communities and, you know, just be yourself and don't listen to, you know, don't listen to what anybody is telling you. Everybody's different, you know. Some people like... you know, feminine men, some people like, you know, a straight girl that, you know, looks like a drag queen, some people, you know what I mean? Like everybody, there's
yeah,
like a,
exactly.
you know, there's a kaleidoscope of things that people like. And you just got to get in touch with, I do a lot of meditating, man. I've been meditating daily since like 2006.
Oh, that's
and I just,
cool. I love it.
Yeah.
I got into it this year, too. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really like, you know, other than putting down drugs and alcohol, it's like the second biggest, most, you know, really important thing that has happened for me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, the reason I bring that up is because, like, it's important to get in touch with yourself and really just listen to your inner voice. You
yeah,
know, you can
exactly.
learn a lot about yourself just from being quiet and listening to what your own truth is.
Yeah, and
you know,
I know my personally, I've been on this personal introspection this past year. I've done some meditation. I've done reconnect healing. You know, I've done some past life regression. I've really got inside myself, and I think more people really should do that because, God damn, I'll tell you, I found out things about myself I never knew or was afraid to find out. You know,
sure,
I
sure,
think that's important.
Yep, totally. I mean, what I think is George Carlin was saying, like, we spend all this money exploring outer space when what we really need to explore is inner space.
Inner space, exactly.
I don't know if
it's
he was the one who said that. Somebody awesome said that, though. I really like that quote.
Well, you know, a lot of people are looking for answers outside of themselves, and the answers are always right inside, and people don't look for those answers inside. I didn't. I always thought my answer was somewhere else, you know, and, you know, talking to a spiritualist and, you know, having some tarot readings and doing stuff like that, I found out that, you know, I'm in control of my own destiny. I the answers are inside myself, and once you realize that, you can do remarkable things.
Absolutely, and, you know, as far as, like, the sexuality thing goes, that's, like, a very important exploration because, you know, sexuality is this it's a magical thing, you know, and it's like it's about your chakras, and it's about like this is about a lot of things, you know. So it's really a personal. You don't want to succumb to, like, you know, what you're supposed to like or what little group you're supposed to be in, because that can just be really damaging.
Oh, yeah.
You know, think about how many people get married and stay with somebody for their whole life miserably because, like, they did it because, like, society said that was the type of person they were supposed to be
with.
Oh,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, we're so hung up on a lot of different things, like sex and whatever. It's just incredible how hung up we are about it, and it's only natural things, and it's all this societal pressure to conform to some man-made dogma that doesn't mean shit, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your music career. Like Mark said, you're an accomplished musician, producer. So tell us about some of your notable achievements in your music career. What are you most proud of?
Well, you know, I'm most proud that, like, I'm, you know, a veteran in the game and I'm still eating and paying rent, basically, because, I mean, you know, that's a miracle for anybody. So I'm definitely most proud of that. And, you know, I've been doing this, I've been producing records for about 12 years. And then before that, I was in bands for 20-something years. So it's like, you know, I kind of been doing this since I was a baby. But, you know, I've been very blessed to, you know, share the vibrations of, you know, some of the greats. You know, I mean, I was on stage with Johnny Thunders when I was 20 years old.
Oh, my God.
It was, awesome. You know, I mean, I opened for the Ramones a couple times. Like, I feel like I got to
rock,
really,
girl.
Like, I got to share in those vibrations, like, at an early age, and that really kind of, like, catapulted me through all the things I've been lucky enough to do, man. You know, I've worked with Blondie, I've worked with Rufus Wainwright, I've worked with, you know, LP, the Clicks, Anthony and the Johnsons, all those people are just, I mean, even if I said one of their names, I'd be, like, honored to, you know, be with them. So it's just, I just feel so lucky, and I feel like, God, these people are trusting me with their music. Like, what's wrong with them?
So what do you do when you produce? For people that may not know what a producer does, what do you exactly do when you produce a song for an artist?
Well, there's many different things. I mean, some people come with, like, you know, come to me with a full song, and they'll say, you know, here's my crappy little demo, and I want to make this sound, you know, big and awesome. So there's, like, that type of a thing where, you know, I just kind of, like, help them polish it up and arrange it and put it together and then, like, you know, make the stuff sound great. There's another thing where people come to me, like, actually Debbie Harry does this a lot. She'll come with just, like, one little kind of, like, one little melody and a sentence. And she'll walk in and she'll say, I have this really cool little thing that I've been walking around singing. And then she'll sing it to me. And then I just kind of, like, I don't put any pressure on that. I'll just, like, you know, we'll sit down, we'll have some food, we'll talk about, like, what's been happening, and then we just kind of, like, build a song around that idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not the only one that does that. Like, there's a lot of artists that write that way. There's a lot of artists that come to the studio with, like, nothing, and then we really birth the baby right there. Like, we birth the baby in that session, you know, which is, to me, really miraculous, because it's always like at the end of the, you know, 10-12 hour session, you know, it'll be the middle of the night or we're getting into the morning hours, and I'll always look at who I'm working with, I'll be like, where was this song this afternoon? Like, the song didn't even exist, you know, like, where was it? Like, was it sitting in a waiting room somewhere, like, waiting for its number to be called? Like, you know, and that's the stuff that really...
You have a gift to recognize and pull out things that people don't usually see for themselves, I guess, right?
I mean, I think that these ideas are just floating around and we just have to grab them. I have no idea. If I knew the answer to that, I'd be a billionaire. But, like, you know, I'm just, that kind of stuff always keeps it fresh for me, because it's just, it's like we're making, like, magic, you know?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
it's, it's sorcery.
Well, and you're personalizing the song for the person that you know came to you.
Absolutely. I mean, that's most of the battle is, you know, trying to find out what story they're trying to tell and keep it pure for them. Because it's not about me, it's about them.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you produced three songs for Blondie. That must have been pretty exciting. She's from up here, I think, right? Isn't she from over Delaware County or something like that?
Debbie actually is from New Jersey, and I think she technically was born in Florida, but I don't think she lived there for very long. But no, I produced more than three songs. I co-wrote and produced her entire solo record, and then a bunch of songs off of the Blondie record that came after that. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Panic of Girls, and. And then three that came after that. I mean, it's a lot. I've done a lot for her and them.
Yeah. I loved her stuff. It was great.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Yeah, she's really, she's definitely still punk rock for sure, just in her attitude.
And I love
attitude.
Rufus Wainwright's sound. It's just something about his sound. So if you have anything to do with his sound, you did a remarkable job.
I don't know if I had anything to do with his sound, but he definitely was interesting to work with. And he has a very unique voice.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a great voice. I love listening to him. Yeah.
He's got a beautiful, unique, rich, you know, real one-of-a-kind thing going on. So, yeah, I really dig him a lot. He's awesome. I was just with him in October. We were out in the desert together. We went to the Integratron. You ever go to the Integratron out in the desert in Death Valley?
Huh.
It's crazy.
No, I guess
it's like out in Joshua Tree. It's called the Integratron. It's like a sound bath. You go in there and you take this, like, it's called a sound bath. It's just like all these, like, weird sound vibrations that echo through
this
room. Yeah, it's incredible. So I was out there with him
that's
and Sherry Vanilla.
You probably should get high for, I guess, it sounds like.
Actually, it makes you high. It actually kind of makes you high. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's cool. Yeah, so you've had an honor, you know, to work with some really cool people. So that's awesome. So you've really made a name for yourself. I love it. I'm so glad you're gracing the cover of my publication this month here too.
I appreciate being on it, and it's like, you know, I think the subject matter and everything is, like, you know, it's long overdue, and I think people really need to start opening their minds about, you know, what you were saying, like, you know, different labels and why you label yourself a certain way or what you're all about or what you, you know, because these things are just, they're getting mixed up and shameful, and if it doesn't stop, then, you know, people are going to go crazy.
Well, like I said in my intro, you know, I get really frustrated when I hear people just toe someone else's line. I'm like, will you please think for yourself, Jesus, you know, it's like, I know there's unique thoughts in that head somewhere, but it's just really frustrating to listen to somebody just kowtow to somebody else's belief and not think for themselves, you know. And
I think that's actually happening.
Just wish more people would do it.
I think it's happening in the gay community. I think that there's a lot of, like, boxes that people put, you know, each other into, and I mean, it must be a lot of pressure to be a gay man, because you gotta, you know, have, like, a, you know, a gym body, and you gotta have, like, you know. There's a lot of pressure, I'm sure, and it also happens in the trans community too. You know, there's a lot of people that, like, there's a lot of people in the trans community that want to keep it binary. And that's not my thing, you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like that whole thing needs to be cracked wide open, because, you know, it's a lot of people didn't transition to become, you know, a straight Republican, you know, other gender or whatever. A lot of people transition just to be somewhere on the spectrum and to be more like themselves.
Yeah. And, you know? Given you would think the queer community being on the fringe like we are and different, people within our community, you would think that they would understand and be more accepting and tolerant of people within our community. And I find a lot of instances where my biggest detractors are gay people, which really just, I've been sitting here scratching my head over that sometimes, you know, but I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate, and I hope that changes a little bit. You know, I watched the whole, like, gay marriage thing happen over the last couple of years, and when I hear, like, people in the gay community, like, complaining about, oh, well, it's not good enough, or it's not this or that, or you still can't do blah, 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 it's like, you know, this is supposed to be progress, not perfection. I think that it's important that we all be grateful for whatever progress is, like, happening.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Exactly. And also in the same thing in the trans community, you know what I mean? Like, now we're seeing, like, out and very vocal trans actors and actresses, and, you know, I think that just the progress they're making, nobody's going to do it perfectly.
No.
And the progress that they've made just to, like, be visible and, again, like, you know, cause people to ask questions and, you know, cause people to question their own stuff. And, I mean, this is all great, man. You know, we get somebody like Laverne Cox out there who's, like, a real trailblazer. And, you know, she's getting out there. She's visible. She's, you know, she's on a mainstream show. And she's, you know, she's causing people to question what their own thing is all about, you know?
Yeah. And that's great. You know, I wish more people would do that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too, for sure. You know, because we didn't have much when growing up. We had, like, David Bowie and Boy George, and that's about it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, that was it. Like, we didn't have much to choose from, you know? So.
Yeah. And, you know, a trans person, being gay, I dealt with a lot of shit. I just can't imagine being trans and dealing with that sexuality plus their gender identity. It's got to be a very traumatic grappling of that issue, you know, internally. It's just an added feature on something.
The good news is that, like, you know, everybody's becoming more and more visible, and I mean, you know, we absolutely have a long way to go, without a doubt. But, you know, now we have, like, young kids that are coming out as trans and, you know, having to speak up about, like, bathroom situations in school, and, you know, I mean, like I said, we have a long way to go, but I think that it could have caused me way less aggravation if, you know, I could have felt okay in my own skin at, you know, age 8 or, you know, when puberty hit, when I was completely devastated, I was like, ah, this is going to be horrible. They're going to make me wear a bra. You know, like, it's like horrible. So, you know, what comes next? I start experimenting with psychedelics.
Yeah, I look back on things. I definitely was that child that definitely tried different things. And, I wouldn't change a thing today. I look back on my 53 years, and I'm like, you know what? I got into trouble. I did some funky stuff, and I don't have any regrets at all, you know?
Wow, dude, you're 53. You look 43.
Oh, so, hey, you're my best friend.
Wow.
Yeah,
that
I get that a lot.
You must
I keep
have,
things
you must,
in order here.
You must have some good living going on.
Well, my mom and dad have good genes, actually, so I'm hoping I have those. I think I do.
All right. Well, I'm going to be 47 this year, so I'm getting up there, too.
Really?
So, yeah.
Now you don't look 47. Yeah.
It's all those cigars and shots of espresso.
Yeah.
keeps me young.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought young. I've always had this youthful outlook to my life, and I try to, I don't act, you know, overly whatever, but I just, I'm youthfully exuberant most times, and, you know, my nieces have a habit of asking me if I'm a 2-year-old, so, you know, that's
where
I'm
from. Well, you know, I have to say, I think that stress is the biggest, like, ager of us, and I think that, I honestly do think that, like, meditating, I really think that, like, helps a person just look more calm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not the most calm person on the planet, but, like, you know, I do like my strong coffee, but I definitely don't stress as much as most people do.
You get in tune with yourself much more, and I think that's the key. It's, you know, you're aligned with your inner self, and I think that creates a calmness that is lacking in a lot of people. And leaving a job after 21 years in local government helps alleviate a lot of stress, too, which is why I did in July. I just walked away from that, and I just jumped off the cliff and started doing totally different things. And you know.
Well, I'm glad you do what you do, man. I mean, this is. How many readers you guys got? A lot, right? So it's like,
yeah.
You know, this is,
no, I
this
got
message
a, you know, I got a good following. It's all over the place. So that's
yeah.
Cool.
The message is getting out there, and I think it's important. You know, like you said, especially in the gay community, I think that this kind of a publication is, you know, it's long overdue.
And
without a doubt.
You know, the people. I just wish the people would support the gay press more. I mean, I don't want that to sound selfish, but you know, a lot of gay press publications go under because there's a lack of support. You know, for whatever reason,
the same thing happens in the music industry. I think there's just a lot of stuff out there that's free for people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like I go through the same thing. I'm like, oh, I wish people would buy records, but it's like. There's a lot of stuff out there for free, which is unfortunate, but, you know, if somebody doesn't get paid.
Yeah, I mean, if I gave this away, I'm sure people would flock to it. But, you know, I got in trouble when I had a free publication. I got behind the eight ball with the printer and all that stuff. But freebies work, but you have to pay for them. And, you know, you're creating a whole bunch of copies. It keeps a lot of pressure on you.
Yep. Well, I'm glad you do it, man.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. So, any closing thoughts you want to leave us? Because we're coming down to our witching hour here.
Yeah. No, we covered a lot, man. I'm feeling good, and I'm glad that, you know, it was nice to talk to you. And, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. And, you know, anything that I can help you with or, you know, talk to you about or whatever, I don't know.
Well, I took your advice and got Michael to, he's going to be my March feature, so.
Oh, nice. So next month we have Michael Cavadias. He's a genius, and he is
I'm looking forward to sending him questions.
He's a funny and interesting actor and writer, and, you got to check out his thing, Clay Woman. Clay Woman is real. It's a real masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah, I checked it out a little bit. I got to delve into it more, and you know, when I'm creating his interview for him.
Cool. And is he going to he'll be on the show?
It's been awesome.
Will Michael be on this show?
What's that?
Will Michael be on this show next month?
I'm going to try to get him on.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
If he's game, I'm game.
Beautiful. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Barb. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, me too, Jim. Thanks for thanks for including me.
Okay.
I'll talk to you soon, all right? Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there we have it. That was Barb Morrison, an awesome interview. And she is my feature cover interview in this month's Diversity Rules magazine. And her interview is on the blog, actually, as well. And next week I have a really cool guy coming on. His name is James Schwartz. He's a poet, and he's the author of The Literary Party, Growing Up Gay and Amish in America. And he's going to provide us a very provocative and eye-opening account of what it was like for him growing up gay and Amish. And he's also going to be reading three of his poems from his book, so you don't want to miss this interview next week here. You're going to love it. So, again, that hour went really quick. It is time to bid adieu until next week. So keep forging ahead and fulfilling your destiny, and don't look back. See you next week.
We hope you have enjoyed your brief sojourn here with Diversity Rules Magazine on the air. We, alas, must part paths until next week, when we will begin a new journey into your mind and discuss compelling issues of the day, touching on diversity and acceptance. The world is a beautifully diverse place with many perspectives, and it is our hope you took away something from tonight's show that enhanced and strengthened your resolve to make the world a better place for all its inhabitants.